Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Coming to you live from somewhere on U.S. 311 South near High Point, North Carolina. Hi, I'm Bob, and this is The Horn. This program is live. It is the 19th day of March, 2020, and, well, I didn't want to miss the program for the first day of spring, and I also didn't want to be on the road during the coronavirus pandemic. So at least I'm one for two. Yeah, and by the way, every program at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. However, I'm going to save the gratitude for a little while, well, until tomorrow, Friday on the front porch. I will be back in the studios, the fabulous Horn studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. I'll be back tomorrow afternoon, but for now, I'm on an errand to Lumberton, North Carolina, which I've never seen before. And it's an exercise in, you know, I was talking the other night how panic doesn't help anything. No matter what you're doing, panicking about it doesn't help. Well, this is that. And by the way, before I go any further, I want to thank Chris in Germany, who was absolutely stunned by the depth and breadth of information that Paul from Parts Unknown provided us last night in yesterday's program. And so got in touch with me and said, hey, Bob, how about a fuck COVID challenge? So the fuck COVID challenge is on the table, and we'll extend it tomorrow if we have to. But Chris has kindly put $100 on the table that she will match if, you know, by whatever combination we can come up with $100, because God, the fundraising goal is somewhere north of $600. And I understand how hard things are right now. Genuinely and truly, I do. But the courtesy of Chris in Germany, the fuck COVID challenge is on the table. And it'll be wonderful if you've got the means, so we can try to keep this whole thing on the air. It would be most, most helpful. I really am. I'm somewhere. And you know what? That the sky down here really is that Tar Heel blue. They're not making it up. That's for real. And I've at least got a little sunshine to drive in till I get down to Lumberton. What I'm doing is I'm picking up Ferg. Because, bless his heart, he wants so badly to work. And so he was feeling like he was making progress, and I guess his therapist told him, yeah, you should try to do this. So he took a job that took him, and it wasn't like working close to people or anything. It was the kind of manual labor that he wants. But he kept looking at, like, Facebook and stuff, and the hillbillies back in West Virginia hollering, boy, I tell you what, that great big old governor, Jim Justice, he's some kind of governor, and he's about to declare the martial law. Needless to say, none of the people spreading this panic on Facebook were even able to spell martial law. They spelled it like Marshall Dillon. So, consequently, Ferg began to freak out right smart. And so this morning, you know, I got up and Agnes and I engaged in our filthy morning habit, you know, those multimillionaires who tell us how to think over on MSNBC. And along about 12:15, the call came in and said, Dad, you got to come get me. I'm afraid they're going to shut down everything and close the borders, and I'm not going to be able to get home. And no amount of reason would move him. And no amount of, son, let me do this on Saturday. Nope. And so past being prologue, I realized that I really, really, really couldn't afford to just sort of tell him to sit tight because that was not possible. And so here in, I guess, about, 2 hours or so, people in North Carolina, hi, Ron, Bob, hey, Bob, probably know where I am-ish, and you know better than I do. I think I'm about 2 hours from Lumberton. And so I'll go down there, grab him, put him in the car, jump back in the car and head back and go as far north as I can and stop for the night somewhere. This does not fill me with either the pleasure or satisfaction. But, yeah, I'll get as far up the road. And that way I'll know that when we get up in the morning, by God, we'll be back at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion and the fabulous Horn Studios in time for Friday on the front porch, because I don't want to miss that. But, you know, that's, and I can't blame him, because people are talking some crazy shit. Because we are, you know, we are hairless primates who are prone to panic. And it seems to be especially true now in West Virginia, where we have our first case. And we know a little bit more about our first case because I want to thank Media for sending the story along. I think it was published in Time. I read it earlier today. And the first case, well, of course, it's a West Virginia style case of COVID-19. What happened was these folks live in the Eastern Panhandle somewhere, and they'd taken a weekend trip to Washington, D.C. That's their best guess. And the woman who was telling a story, her husband, came down sick, running a fever up to 103 degrees. She took him to the ER, and they said, oh, we don't treat that around here. And she said, look, I'm not being mean or anything, but I'm not going to leave here until he's been screened. So they took him into an isolation room, screened him, and said, well, you'll have to wait till Tuesday for the test results to come back. Tuesday, no call came. She called. They said, hey, nah, we don't know nothing. We don't know nothing about no test kits. Then an ER doc calls and says, well, I mean, you know, we ran the test, but we don't have the results. We don't really know where they are. Another ER doc calls and said, well, no, we sent them to the state lab. Maybe you might want to call the kid. And so the poor woman gets run through this monumental rigmarole. Calls the great big old Jim Justice's governor's office. Well, we don't know nothing up here. You want to go to Bob Evans and have some sausage? Really. Now we got to all hold hands here, and we got to be smart and stay apart. So the poor lady finally has a friend who apparently thinks she knows Joe Manchin or something, get in touch with Joe Manchin's office. An aide from Joe Manchin's office calls and says, you're going to get a call back in an hour. And eventually the public health director, a woman named Kathy Slimp, calls the woman and says, I don't know why they told you the test results were lost. I got them in my hand right here. You sitting down? And so the woman describes that she sat down, and she then and the State Department of Health finally told her, your husband's got it. And so now the woman says she's probably symptomatic too, and having, of course, a hard time getting tested. And West Virginians are reading all of this and flipping the hell out. It didn't help much. I mean, bless his heart, Joe Manchin's trying. It's just that he's so used to erasing an entire segment of the population of the state of West Virginia that it just comes naturally to him now. So he shows up on my filthy morning habit this morning, and Mika is talking to him, and Joe's talking to him, and he says, And he's trying to explain, as I have explained in greater detail on this program, why West Virginians are actually a greater at-risk population than just about anybody else in the country. The only thing is, Joe Manchin says, it's because of our hard workers in the mines and industry, and thereby completely erased tens of thousands of West Virginians who, for 20-plus years, have breathed poisonous blasting dust from his beloved mountaintop removal coal operations. And, of course, that's not surprising that he would forget about them, because it took us nearly 10 years to get him to even acknowledge that the nearly 30 peer-reviewed journal articles that acknowledge the health crisis that is mountaintop removal even existed. Not that they were right or wrong, but even they just existed. And so Joe sat there and talked, hard work in West Virginia. Never a word about the innocent West Virginians who had no connection to the coal industry, who never got a check from the coal industry, and who had their ability to breathe stolen from them by a relentless, remorseless, miserable, avaricious, soulless coal industry. So that was the beginning of the day. And then, like I said, a little after 12, it was Dad come get me. And so here I am on the road. And that being the case, I mean, this is not going to be a normal program. There's no way for me to be fed audio or anything like that. So I can't do any calls. And frankly, I don't like the idea of doing a program, trying to talk for all the way to Lumberton, North Carolina. I don't like to be that distracted for that long. I'm not distracted. I'm paying very close and careful attention, by the way. I'm sure I'll get hate mail. Bob, how dare you? No. I had to talk to you guys. And, you know, it's funny
you
the things you think
get
of.
Hate mail, dear. Because I'm
well,
here
no,
in the
people
studio.
Worry.
I know.
No. People worry and say, Bob, they say, Bob, don't talk on the phone, you know, because I told them the story about the big blue fucking couch in Lexington, Kentucky.
But I'm not looking
so
for
far,
a couch,
no couches.
Okay?
I'm keeping about 50 car lengths, and I'm keeping about 50 car lengths between me and everything else on the road, because I've got a name for the highways in North Carolina. Little Earnhardts everywhere. Everybody on this road is having a goddamn NASCAR moment. I mean, speed limit 65. Well, that must mean I'm supposed to do 90.
Just,
ain't rubbing, you ain't racing.
Just stay
Knock
calm,
the chip
dear.
Up. Hey, look at my, how you like my new, how you like my new haircut, Andy? It's all slickety in the back. Oh, God. Hell, I'm just 75 miles from Rockingham. I don't know. I may wind up the beach. Well, they closed those. Florida finally closed its beaches. Last I checked, Alabama was still open. But remember, Governor Kay Ivey of the state of Alabama values life. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, just a couple of things, some observations going down the road. One being, let me just check here and see where the hell I'm supposed to be going, because I don't know if this machine's going to be talking to me. Pardon the dead air. 1 mile and then 9/10 of a mile and stay on US 74. All righty then. As I was coming out of West Virginia into Virginia, I did see something that, and you know, maybe it was just another day and you're just doing that thing, but we apply significance to things based upon the way the lay of the land and the world before us. For instance, there was an earthquake yesterday that, got it, thank you. There was an earthquake that shook Utah yesterday. And it shook Salt Lake City, and it shook it so bad that it shook the horn out of the angel moron's hand at the top of the temple there in Salt Lake City. Yeah, I had it the first time, sweetie. And so, you know, I'm sure that there are probably the Mormons out. Got it. 64 miles. Okay, but I shouldn't be having a whole lot more interruption there. But I'm sure there were Mormons who saw the horn fall out of the angel moron's hand there at the very top of the spire of the temple and thought, well, that's a sign. Because, you know, when you live in the demon-haunted world, things like that are, well, they're a sign. And it wasn't quite as metaphysical as that, but as I was traveling down I-77 coming out of West Virginia into Virginia, I noticed that there was I saw something up ahead that kind of, and when I get a minute, I'll post it to social media. I snapped the picture. No, so I saw up ahead something that and I heard a few. I heard a little a brief guitar arpeggio that it's in everybody's head. And I remembered the opening footage of vehicles careening around dirt roads, and it was a couple of what I would call MASH ambulances. They were on a flatbed. They were being transported. They were two. I presume they were Hummers that had been customized, if you will, and turned into ambulances. Two rear swinging doors. There were two of them on a flatbed, painted khaki, with the big white square with the Red Cross in it. They were obviously military ambulances, and they were southbound on I-77 to I know not where. Pure speculation. My best guess is maybe they were going to be part of a mobile testing setup. I don't know. But that was kind of interesting. And I've gotten that, man, I am in the South. It is 82 freaking degrees outside and stuff is blooming. The red buds are in bloom down here. Oh, they're so beautiful. It's kind of surreal to see all of this in the midst of the apocalypse. And, it made me think of something because, when Italy got hit, they got hit in Lombardy and in the Veneto and in Venice. Venice is so devoid of tourists and people generally that the canals are clear for the first time maybe in 500 years. You can actually see fish in them because there are no boats. Strange, huh? But that in turn led me to think about my favorite Renaissance painter, and he's actually at the very front end of the Renaissance, is a Venetian by the name of Giorgione. And there are very few paintings in the world that can actually be positively attributed to him. But he was rethinking, the art of painting. And he was a close associate of Titian. Titian picks up where Giorgione leaves off. Giorgione is maybe 29 years old. His beloved comes down with the plague, because the plague periodically burned through Europe. And he goes to take care of his beloved. She dies of the plague. He dies of the plague. And the face of Renaissance art is forever changed by his absence. But you can look it up online. Probably his most famous painting is one called La Tempesta, the storm, the tempest. And it seems a more than apt analogy for some of what seems like we're dealing with here. When I get to a stopping place or get to, it made me want to see the painting again. One of these days I'm going to figure out a way to have a nice print of it and hang it in the studio, because you can just sit there and stare at it for days on end. They've got a couple of Giorgione's in the National Gallery in D.C., and I have just sat there and stared at them because they just pull you in. But that's why I'm not in the Fabulous Horn Studios this evening. It just is what it is. And so I will ask you for your forbearance and come tomorrow evening, tomorrow afternoon, 5 o'clock Eastern, 2 o'clock Pacific. I'll be back in the Fabulous Horn Studios in the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, and we'll get to cussing and discussing on what is my favorite day, Friday on the front porch. In the meantime, if anybody would care to respond to Chris in Germany's challenge, that would be mightily welcome, and we'll pass out the thank yous in copious quantities when the program begins again. Just a little confused there. Sorry, bub. Begins again tomorrow. In the meantime, thanks a lot. I think Brother Deacon Asa will start last night's program, because there may be some people who didn't get to hear Paul from Parts Unknown's conversation last night who might very well benefit from it. It was, among other things, Chris in Germany said, I threw out my grapes. Probably a good idea. No grapes, no cherries, no strawberries, no raspberries, no blueberries, no blackberries. If you've got fruit that doesn't have a hide on it, probably leave it be. So thanks, everybody. And thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. And thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time each evening, no matter how you so choose to do. Dang it, I'm coming through Lexington, and I bet the barbecue joints are closed. Rats. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Ace and On.Live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.